Assalamu alaikum, everyone, and welcome back to Vortex of Truth. My name is Niamat Rawabi, and I'm delighted to have you join me on this Friday afternoon. Very often, it's easy to make a split-second decision about a topic, especially sensitive topics, without looking deeper and trying to put yourself in the position of the person being judged. It's sometimes unnecessary to do this in cases where right and wrong are outlined clearly, but on the other hand, there are countless situations where a bit of empathy could change a lot. Vortex of Truth is an attempt to evoke that empathy in our listeners. Today's sketch will be exploring a situation that we're all going to face from a few different perspectives. Death is the topic of today's show, and we're going to be looking at it through the eyes of an old woman who's lived a long, full life, and then those of her youngest daughter who can't quite come to grips with the situation. This is inevitable. It's the one thing that we can all be sure of that's never going to be in question. We are all going to die at some time or another. The only question is when and in what state. The elderly have a very different relationship with death to most of us. Why? Because it's an unavoidable truth that they are growing ever closer to it. When young men and women die, it shocks us. But when the elderly die, there's a sense of this is a tragedy, but also it was their time. When young people die, we're always struck by how sudden and abrupt the end of their lives is. It feels as if they were robbed of time, not so with our elderly. So then, how does it feel for an elderly person to know that they're running out of time more acutely than most to see their friends and peers die, perhaps to survive their spouses and siblings and be the last ones left of their generation? How must it feel to be a relic of a long-gone era, even a burden that creates a strain on the younger generation who is still fit and is waiting in the wings to take their places as the heads of families? And then, how does it feel to be a grown man or woman and watch as the parents who raised you slowly become faded versions of their vibrant selves as they succumb to illness or frailness? Death comes for us all, but certainty does not mean ease, and this unavoidable truth of life can be the hardest to grapple with and accept. As Muslims, we know that this life is a test and not the final destination, but we also know that the final destination we wish to arrive at is not certain. Making peace with death can be very hard. It is also necessary. So, today's sketch is called Changing Roles. She had never agreed to call herself an old woman. Not when her first grandchild was born, nor when that precious grandchild had brought to her a child of his own. Precious little thing she was, and the boy, man now, but forever in her mind, the beautiful grandchild she cherished and indulged, had insisted on naming his daughter after her. It had been only recently that she'd come to terms with the fact that the little toddler would not remember her. In her own mind, she was still the 21-year-old girl who'd stared at everything in sight the first time she'd come to the big city, carting along everything she owned and struggling to make peace with the fact that she now belonged in this loud, dirty new place at the side of a man that she barely knew. She'd joined the family, had watched the deaths of two generations of it, and the births of three more. She was one of the last left, frail old Ma, who recalled old history and gathered children around her. So that's what they were, no matter that they had children and even grandchildren of their own now. She'd had a hand in raising every one of them, and her mind could not think of them as anything but the little ones they'd been when they'd stolen into her heart and made their place there. She knew she was not so precious to them as they were to her, privately admitted that she did not like them all the same, even though she refused to show it. Her own children knew better than to treat her as frail, but their cousins, her beloved husbands, nephews and nieces, they thought of her as an old lady now, to be pitied and relegated to the sidelines. It did not occur to them to think of her as anything more than an old, uneducated lady. It was not their fault, perhaps, she admitted. It was not a dumb thing to educate a daughter the way a son was when she was young. And so, as a young woman, she displayed proficiency in the womanly arts, all those needed for survival, and had hidden her knowledge of men's work. It wasn't uncommon what she'd done. Friends and family did the same. It was how the world worked back then. Men were brilliant and women were nurturing. Those who differed lived quietly in hidden spaces where no one could see. Now, her granddaughters were as brilliant as her grandsons, just as loud and bright and happy to indulge their ma with a little showing off when she asked. They were the best parts of her day now, these young ones who didn't know enough to look at her with worry and pity. It pained her heart every time she arrived back from a doctor's office, not for her own sake, but for the lines and furrows the truth created in the faces of her children. They loved her, and she accepted it as her due. She had been a good mother, she knew this, that her children did love her, would grieve her, was only right. Still, it hurt her when they were saddened by the news of her ever-nearing demise. She was an old woman. Death would come for her eventually, and eventually was rather a lot closer than it had ever seemed. The doctors knew it. The nieces and nephews knew it. From the way he clung to her just a week ago, her older son knew it too now. She herself had accepted the truth long ago. The certainty had settled further into her bones with every funeral she attended, every tear she watched fade. She'd never wanted to accept the truth of the matter, but there it was. She was an old woman, and she'd reached the end of her life. Life had been kind to her, and she had few regrets. If she were to go now, she would shut her eyes knowing that her life had been meaningful. Perhaps she hadn't changed history, but she'd contributed to her little world well enough. She'd been a good wife and daughter-in-law, even if she'd never managed to please her mother-in-law as well as the old woman had expected to, if had expected her to. Her last remaining duty would be to ensure that her children had made their peace and were prepared to go on without her. They had full lives, people who cared for them a plenty, but a mother's heart worried. Her oldest son still had his youngest in that awkward in-between stage that bridged childhood and adulthood. She would not live to see that youngest finish her high school, would never hug her and give her the same speech she'd given all the promising young girls she'd watched become young women and had helped guide in their journeys. She would not see most of her grandchildren marry, would not safely tease and poke fun at potential matches. She would not hold another great-grandchild. She would not endure like a statue. She would die, as the elders she'd buried had before her. And just as she had survived, so did she pray those she would leave behind would survive as well. Death had been terrifying when she was younger. Lighting a gas stove, birthing a child, driving a car, all of it was so dangerous. She felt all of her roles and responsibilities so keenly then. Her husband had laughed at her and teased her that she would argue the angel of death into giving her more time to live so she could hand over all her many duties to her satisfaction before shutting her eyes for the very last time. How he would laugh now to see her still standing. The last of the old ones still clinging to life because she was too afraid to let go. He had been right about so much. Her eyes pricked with tears as his face, faded now with the passage of time, flashed in her mind's eye. Nanima, one of her youngest grandchildren hovered at the foot of her bed, the girl's hands clenching and unclenching in her awkwardness. How long had the poor thing been standing there while she all gathered? Rabia, what is it, Poppet? Mummy said to come visit with you, young Rabia exclaimed. She twisted her fingers together anxiously. Are you okay, Nanima? You're crying, she shouted off. She put the bed next to herself, her bangles jingling, and the young girl sat obediently. I'm fine, Rabia. I was just thinking about your Nana. I miss him sometimes, darling. It's not something to worry about. Rabia's young arms tightened around her shoulders, warming her old bones. Sorry, Nani, the girl whispered. I miss Nana, too, she admitted. And then, did you love Nana? In a very curious voice. A laugh rose in her throat, and she held it in, not wanting to offend the young teenager's no doubt delicate pride. Very much so, Rabia. I loved your Nana very, very much. Rabia thought about this for a moment, her brow furrowing. But you didn't even know each other when you got married, came the objection. She had a suspicion that her granddaughter had been watching too many movies. She would have to remind her daughter-in-law to monitor the girl. Rabia had a vivid imagination, and she tended to believe the stories she read and watched were truths. The first time she'd read a story to the then very young Rabia, the little girl had thought the story was fact, and about the family who lived a few doors down in her parents' bottom block. That had been an awkward conversation for her parents. How's your Nanima? Rabia prompted, and she realized that she'd lost herself again. What is it? She answered absently, pulling herself back to the present. Can you tell me about you and Nana? How did you love each other after everything? Her drug passed her mind back. She'd forgotten many a thing in her numerous years, but the first 2 years of her marriage remained crystal clear. That's when it had begun, their love story. Not before marriage, or even before an engagement, the way the children seem to want to do it these days. She'd gotten married with the blessings of both families, and after praying their required to recapture her, and analyzing her feelings when she woke up as though she were deciphering a map, it had been quick and hurried. exactly the opposite of the way they had fallen in love with one another. She explained this to her granddaughter, who still looked puzzled. But how? Rabia persisted. And so Hajra and Anima indulged her and sketched out the story. She led the young girl through a sudden and difficult pregnancy, through a birth that had been filled with all danger that births were at that stage, and the joy that came from it nonetheless. Uncle Farouk, Rabia confirmed. Yes, that's right. Her first child. It had been named entirely without her input. It wasn't quite necessary back then, and if she were going to die, it didn't much matter what opinion she held. She was perhaps still a little bitter about that even now, though she did not share with the young girl who decided to shift and watch herself closer to her nanny now. She continued with the story, explaining that she'd been sick for a while. When she'd recovered, she'd been greeted with an unusually hands-on husband, who didn't feel inclined to stop caring for their son after having unexpectedly enjoyed the bond they'd forged in her absence so very much. Bafarok kept in his father's favor right from the beginning, and that had never changed. Time and relying on one another as a team had planted the seed of affection between them, and it had flourished easily. Not the dramatic love stories that Rabia had been watching, spellbound for months now, but something slow and real. It had been sweet. She still had the remnants of tokens from that time. She should give them to her daughter soon, so they wouldn't be disregarded as unimportant keepsakes. Her eldest daughter's voice echoed through the house, summoning Rabia. The young girl pulled a face and hollered back that she was on her way. Softly, she chastised gently. Sorry, Nanima, will you tell me more later? The girl asked eagerly. She probably wanted to get out of the cleanup. Still, there was no real harm in indulging her. All right, just tell your mummy I said it's okay. Rabia dashed out the door. She got to her feet slowly, taking her time. She wouldn't join in the brood for lunch today. Perhaps supper if her body decided it wanted to take in food today. For now, she would go in search of that beloved box. It was strange to think that she no longer knew exactly where it was. Once upon a time, it had sat on her bedside table in easy reach, so she could reminisce. That had been before the children were grown, of course, when she'd been young enough to be so sentimental that openly. There it was, on the top shelf. Carefully, she reached up, aware that the old box that was delicate. It had first been tucked away because curious fingers had, while turning it this way and that, dropped it and created a long scratch along one side. She could not remember which child had been searching out the secrets of the box, but was almost sure it had been one of her girls. She'd been angry at the time. A silly thing. She strained a little, and the box remained frustratingly just out of reach. The step stool she'd kept in the corner for this very reason for the past decade was quickly fetched, and she made the quick climb. The box was in her hands for the moment, and her attention absorbed by her precious cargo, she failed to notice how she stepped. There was a moment of fear, and then pain. She could not get up. She had never before not been able to get up. What was dying was helplessness. Her body had been old and rusty before, but it had always obeyed her, though it began to take longer. She shut her eyes, hoping that the box was all right. Hurried footsteps sounded outside her bedroom door, and for a moment, she spared a thought for the poor person who'd be the one to find her. Oh dear, hopefully it would not be one of her children. A niece or nephew would be best. They wouldn't care as much, though it was kind of her to wish it. There was a scream, but her eyes would not open to show her the person it had come from. Not one of her children. She'd never heard them sound anything like that before. But which niece, then? It seemed climbing a ladder to get a box of keepsakes was considered foolish and resulted in her age and broken bones. She'd once jumped from heights that were higher while playing with and entertaining her brood, and now it seemed one fall from this low height had handicapped her. Yet another cruel joke of age. She did not begrudge her children their worry. Allah knew she'd worried and fretted over them constantly over their lives. Still, the sudden lack of freedom was frustrating. Everyone wanted Ma to rest and sit in one place so that she didn't fall again. They were shocked and they were scared. She knew this, but her temper fayed regardless when she found herself slapping at her well-meaning children and grandchildren. She was not a child. She'd raised them all as children, and to be treated as a stressed-out infant would be, with naps and lie-downs suggested to her in the same seemingly sweet tone she'd used to use with them, was infuriating. She had been ready to prepare her family for her death, had thought that she'd made her peace with the changes in her body. But for this, she was not prepared. A prisoner in her own home was not where she'd ever intended or dreamed she'd end up. Her jailers were less than terrible. They smiled and attended to her needs without complaint. If only they'd been able to recall her sharp ears, she would never have been injured by the constantly repeated, "She doesn't have much time left." How things changed in the blink of an eye. One day, not long after the catastrophic fall, she sat on her bed, caught in the middle of an attempt to swing her limbs out of the bed so she could get to the bathroom and wash her face. Mommy, her most anxious child, her youngest, was horrified as though she'd walked in on something obscene and not her mother beginning her morning ritual as she had for decades. "Oh, let me help you, Mommy." She pretended stupidity to not injure the child's feelings. "Help me with what?" There, she was up, with just about as much effort as a baby attempting to take their first steps, she imagined. And steps she would. "Oh, let me help you to the bathroom, Mommy. Imagine what would happen if you fall." "I would die, my dear. And perhaps it's about time." "Oh, we don't say that." And that was it. And why should I not say it? Everyone is thinking it. Everyone is saying it where they think I cannot hear. Perhaps they forget that breaking my ankle doesn't damage my hearing. "Oh, Mommy, you're upset." "Yes, I am. I am upset. Thank you for noticing. I am upset that my family thinks of me as a big burden to them. I am upset that you all have forgotten that I am not a new child to enter this house and have decided to manage me like one. I am very upset, my dear. If I were to tell you all of why, we would be standing here for hours." Her daughter was very clearly hurt, but her energy for soothing hurt had disappeared some time ago. And when that hesitant hovering began anew, it was unbearable. "I don't need help," she reminded the girl. Mother herself now, and perhaps that was why she imagined herself her own mother's daughter, her own mother's mother, and blessedly there was then peace. Hard-won peace, but it was there, and she would enjoy it. Soon it would be gone as well. Almost as soon as she returned to her bedroom, picking up a brush to attend to her hair, there was a hesitant knock. Her outburst had done some good then if they'd learned to knock again. "Come in." "Oh, it was Ravia." She had seen little of the young girl lately, as she'd either been too upset to or had been kept from coming to visit and demand stories as she liked. For Ravia, she could and would make announcements. So young, she could not be expected to know as much as her parents were. "Nanny, ma'am, Mummy asked me to come and ask you if you'd like to come down to Alexis." "Yes," she decided, feeling pleased. She would make the most of this energy for as long as it chose to stay with her. "Ravia, have it. And then later, would you tell me about Nana?" True pleasure flowed through her for the first time in an age. It wasn't a lie what they said about being the ones keeping you young. "Yes, I will tell you about Nana." And they walked down to the dining room together, grandmother and granddaughter arm in arm. It did not feel so insulting to have the young teenager's arm around her. Perhaps because not so very long ago, she had been the one to give those young hands support. It was easier to pretend to herself that this was what she was doing, and not that even this little girl thought of her as frail and infirm. A thought occurred to her once they'd cleared the steps, and she sent Rabia back up with a very important errand, warning the girl to be careful. It was a small collection when it was spread out on the coffee table like that, but the memories held in that little collection were weighty. Rabia picked up the closest object to her, a set of little white baby socks, and showed them to her. "Did my mommy wear this?" she asked curiously. "No, darling. Your mommy didn't wear it, but your daddy did. And so did you." Every child of hers wore those socks. It was a tradition that had started with her eldest and had been continued on. 15 pairs of feet had been covered by those little socks, even when the child was born in winter and they were really too light, we warned Nan. She had simply put on another set of thicker socks over the delicate cloth her granddaughter now held in her hands. "Wow," Rabia breathed, staring curiously down at them. "They're so tiny. They've been made for a newborn's feet. The only thing she'd been able to create during her first pregnancy before succumbing to the energy drain it had caused. Little Farouk had been dressed entirely in hand-me-downs until she'd been able to recover and take control of clothing the little boy again. Rabia carefully placed the socks back into the box and moved on to something else. Dried roses, old jewelry, and other keepsakes were carefully sorted together. And then the girl looked up at her expectantly. She spoke until her throat grew hoarse, entertaining the teenager with old stories of her husband's kindness and faithfulness. He might have aged into a stern-looking man, and Allah knew she no longer looked like anything sweet, but they hadn't always been that way. If only she still had the photographs to prove it. But that was a pointless wish. Her energy had grown as she remembered back to those days, but now, as the precious box was filled again with the last of the letters she'd kept, it felt as though that strength was being put into this box as well. Exhaustion made her stoop forward, and faintly she heard herself say, "I think it's time for me to rest." We'll be taking a short ad break now, and don't forget to come back and join us for the last segment of Vortex Retreat today to read about, to hear about the end of the story. Shukran, and we'll be back soon. Assalamualaikum everyone, and welcome back to Vortex of Truth. We are in the second segment of today's program, which is on the realities of death. We looked at death through the eyes of an old lady who had lived a very full life up to having grandchildren and even great-grandchildren, and was still a little bit struggling to come to terms with the fact that she was going to, very inevitably, as we all are, meet her creator quite soon. And now we're going to be taking a look at that very same lady's decline and illness from the eyes of her daughter. All right, let's get started. My mother believes herself to be a superwoman. When we were young, she seemed to never need rest, instead being the one who worked earliest and slept latest, no matter how much Daddy or anyone else tried to coax her to take a rest. It was only after Daddy left us that she began to slow, just a little. We worry over her, all of us. She's frail, although she won't admit it, and we don't want her last days to be spent in pain. We just want to care for her like she cared for us for so long. Is that such a bad thing? Mommy doesn't like it, the fact that we fuss. I know this. I share it with her. As the youngest, I was the most fussed over. It's meant that in the eyes of this family, not my own little one, that I have never become an adult. My siblings dismiss the worst for my concerns over Mummy, but they don't see what I do. She pretends more for them. I understand this. They are louder, and it is easier for her to remember too when they're in the room. When I saw her that day, crumpled on the floor like a broken doll, it felt like I was spinning. The way I thought of my mother, it changed that day. That is why I fuss now, and fret when I see her hesitate to make a movement. She didn't hurt herself badly, swear to Allah. Only broke an ankle. But even that at her age is enough to do a great deal of damage. Healing requires so much that I worry she's given too much. She's well enough when she's recalling the past. Well enough that when she's remembering her own whole strength. But I see the way she flags. Rabia helps to give her something to focus on whenever the child can be spared by her schoolwork. But we can't expect a 13-year-old to become caretaker to her grandmother. They love one another dearly. But Rabia is 13. She wants to spend time with her friends. I don't see any other way, though. And neither does anyone else. Mommy has little patience for the rest of us. Rabia, young as she is, cannot remember a time when Nanima wasn't a little frail and stooped. But the rest of us do. And it makes it hard for us to watch her struggle. Mummy would prefer if we ignored her moments and left her to struggle, but I cannot see the kindness in that. More, I can't bring myself to watch and do nothing. I have tried to emulate my mother in everything in my life, and she was, and is she's still here. She is a caretaker to the core. It's what Daddy loves most about her, and it's what we all associate with Mummy. Food, warmth, entertainment. She gave us softness and happiness, and I will give her the same. She's angry with me at the moment, and it's difficult. I can't imagine how frustrated she must feel as she grows weaker. This is what I fear most about growing old. It always has been. We all watched Mummy take care of Daddy as he got sicker and sicker, and it was enough for me to understand that the end that I wish for is sudden. Losing myself bit by bit would be far more painful than the sudden pain of a violent, quick death. I said none of this to anyone. I won't scare my husband and my siblings. While they understand, have more pressing concerns to deal with. Deep in my heart, I pray for the ending that I want, even as I wonder whether it's sinful to try and arrange death to your liking. Today, I'm cooking. Mommy's chest has been bothering her, and so I've chosen to make a big batch of soup. It will freeze easily and be convenient for the others when they come to stay to just leave a container to defrost should it be needed. I live closest, so I often pop into Mommy's house, and there's no hardship for me to cook for my boys here instead of in my own house, but I can keep an eye out for Mommy. I pretend that something is broken, usually. Mommy must think that we live in the most run-down house in town. But she doesn't question it, and seeing me work not just for her, but also for my children, means that she doesn't object to the little I do for her as well. This week's soup is as rich as I can make it without it being unpleasant. Mommy's lost so much weight. I used to scold her before when she spoke about her death, insisting that she wasn't going to die for a long time, and speaking like that was morbid. She no longer makes those comments, and I am relieved. I can no longer say that she will not die for a long time. I can no longer say that she will not die this year. Every single day that she can still get out of bed seems like a fresh miracle. I don't want to think of the reason that she no longer says these things. Nor do I want to think of the documents my oldest brother has been gathering from the safes and studies in this house to piece together a large estate while Mummy is still here and able to answer his questions if need be. I don't know where his strength comes from, to face the truth that is hurting towards us with such logic and calm. Thinking about Mummy's will forces me to think of the need for it and how, all too soon, it will be used to separate what remains after she does not among us. This is not fair. This is meant to be quick. It is meant to be fast. It is not meant to be this drawn-out, agonizing stretch. How long can our hearts take the strain, waiting for the final break? Mummy, she's the foundation of the family. She's the head of the family. We all know it, even those who don't precisely like her very much. Buildings don't remain standing when their foundation disappears, and I don't know that any of us can take on the burden that will need shouldering once she is gone. People die every day. But this is different. This is my mother, and I cannot make my peace with it. I just can't. It will not be long now. Nani Mahajra is going to die. Little Rabia was the one she'd explained that to. Would you have credit the little girl, the teenager now? She didn't fuss or deny it. She simply accepted it, as the young do. Rabia's mother had quickly swooped in to usher the girl away, no doubt worried that some trauma had been visited upon her head by her mother-in-law. And then her children had gathered around her like crows. She no longer bothered to try and cheer them. The truth was the truth, and they needed to accept it. Mommy was going to leave them, and they would be just fine. They had wives and husbands, children of their own. They would survive, and they would press on as they needed to. The certainty that she felt about all of this was a last gift from Allah. She was convinced of that. Oh, her poor children. She had been a burden on them last year. Angry and grumpy as she had allowed herself to become. She hoped that they forgave her an old woman's frustration with this undignified end she'd been given. They would. They were good people, these children of hers. She was so very proud of them, and so very ready to close her eyes for the last time. They sensed this. It was why they surrounded her now. Extended leave had been taken from work against her wishes, and she'd been given the unexpected pleasure of having more time with her babies than she'd had since they truly were babies. She told them as much history as her tired mind could still ring out, and then let them be the ones to speak. It was a pity that she'd never known some of the more intimate words they'd confided in her earlier, but perhaps it took circumstances such as these to make grown men and women come to confide in Mummy again, for the very last times. Not all had been said, nor had all been resolved, but it was plenty what they had gotten, and she was content. She could not be ungrateful, not with this long, slim life of hers. It was so very much, a great deal more than many who deserved it were given. All right, and that's the end of today's sketch. Quite a heavy sketch today. We explored a few things, including the difficulty of grappling with death, which can get harder when you see it coming, and the delicacy of interacting with a loved one who is ill or old and may need help, but still feels just as much as an independent person as they did 5, 10, or 15 years ago. It is a huge shock to suddenly go from being caretaker to the invalid, and this can cause frustration and resentment, which are entirely natural. This is why we may find that tension and tempers can run high in these situations, not due to a lack of love, but sometimes due to an excess of it. We also touched on the fact that it's perhaps a little sad, that we don't often have enough time to spend with our loved ones and listen to their history and past until we reach a difficult stage in their lives, because of very real responsibilities that can't be put aside. Even so, it's a reminder to us that all our grandparents and parents led full, rich lives, and that we should show interest and care in those vibrant lives. Learning the history is a beautiful way to connect with your elders in a different way and will lead you seeing them with entirely new eyes. It's something that I would encourage everyone to do. I, myself, when I was probably 14 or 15, found myself researching the history of my family, not because of any altruistic desire, but rather because I had been given an assignment in history in school. And that's a bit sad, but it also allowed me to learn a lot about my grandparents and about the time that they'd lived in. It helped me to learn how, you know, my grandfather had gotten into medical school and how my grandmother and my grandfather met, and my grandmother's reversion story, which was absolutely beautiful. I am entirely sure that all of your grandparents and parents and every grand aunt or grand uncle have beautiful snippets of knowledge to give you if only you have the time to sit with them and listen and learn. The last thing that I want to touch on in the sketch that we did today is the anger that can come. We spoke about the fact that grappling with it can be very hard when you know that it's coming. And it can be very frustrating as the new caretaker when you're taking care of someone who is so much older than you and who you have so much respect for, to realize that they perhaps are not behaving in the way that you expected, the way that you've seen them behave for so many, many years. And though it is very frustrating, we do need to be understanding about the fact that if we were in such a situation, if we were from being entirely healthy and happy and able to do what we wanted, able to even use our hands and legs the way that we wanted to suddenly being very, very ill or being unable to walk properly or anything like that, it would be incredibly frustrating for us as well. It is very difficult to grow old and grow ill and infirm, and we need to have that compassion. I know that in most of our community, it's more accepted and more usual for us to take care of our elderly ourselves and not have nurses and homes and those kinds of things. But even as we love and care for the family that we're taking care of, we do also need to realize that there are specialized skills that do go into it. And one of those is recognizing with empathy that the behavior, the emotional behavior of the parents and the grandparents and the other loved ones who are reaching the stage in their life, that their emotions are very difficult to control at times, and that that frustration has nothing to do with you as a person or as the caretaker, or because you're not appreciated and wanted and loved or anything like that, but because it's difficult to come to terms with things. It's difficult to accept eventually. It's difficult for all of us, really, to accept eventually that we are going to die. And as the elderly, it's much more of a very pressing concern. It is true that we're all going to die, and we don't know when or at what time, and we should all probably be thinking of death as just around the corner, but we don't. The society we live in is very, very, I would almost say, silent about death at times, and we tend to think that our lives are going to stretch out forever if we're young, or even if we're middle-aged, or even if possibly we're old, because we don't think about it enough. So I would urge you to have compassion and empathy for those who are struggling and those you are caring for, and also realize that it is human for you to feel certain feelings like frustration and perhaps a bit of anger yourself, but you should not be taking those feelings out on anyone else. We know and understand that we make do when we're angry, or perhaps we go and speak to someone that we trust and who we believe will not judge us, and we release those feelings, because if we don't release those feelings, they become grudges, and that's not what you want with your loved ones. And we've reached the end of today's show, unfortunately. As always, shukran for joining us on this episode of Vortex of Truth. We hope that you found this beneficial, and as always, if you would like to send through any feedback, you are more than welcome to send it through to me, Nehemiah Drabbaby. I'm available on all forms of social media, either under Nehemiah Drabbaby or under The Imperfect Muslimah, which is the handle that I use for my blog. You could also, if you prefer not to use social media and would rather like to use an email, then send an email through to theimperfectmuslimahblog@gmail.com. Please do tune in next week Friday when we tackle a new topic, and do get in touch if you'd like us to cover any particular topic. So far we've covered cheating, anxiety, slavery and addiction in the last episode together, and today we've covered death, specifically for those who are reaching the end of their lives in terms of old age. And if you would like us to cover anything specific, we're always open to new ideas. All right, have a lovely afternoon further. Assalamu alaikum, and thank you again for joining us.